You're listening to OK Boomer with Ralph Odierna and Victoria Greenwood, only on LA Talk Radio.
He forgets to turn the mics on again. See what happens? I'm gone for 2 weeks, but this time at least I caught it. It was a chick fest the last 2 weeks. Not that it's not one tonight, but at least I'm back in the big chair. After going to Vail, Colorado, where I got to hang out with a bald eagle, which was very cool. And then on to Phoenix, Arizona, where I try to get away from it all and get a couple of days to myself in a cigar lounge in Scottsdale, Arizona, called Churchill's on 44th and Camelback. Lo and behold, three guys from the Grand Havana Room sitting there imbibing on cocktails and smoking stogies. Good old Lee Appleby and the Israelis, Avi and Brian. It was a fun time to be had. But before we get into the show tonight, we want to thank Angela Marsden, who is our sponsor at the Pineapple Hill Saloon over on Moore Park in Van Nuys. Go in there for a patty melt, a tuna melt, any kind of melt, and support those local businesses that struggled through COVID, made it through to the other side, and still are having problems to this day. So what was it like sitting in the big chair for 2 weeks?
It was great, Ralph.
Was it?
it was wonderful. There was no stress. I'm just kidding. There never is anyway. No, it was cool. It's different. With you, I feel like it's a lot more business. And then me and Katie are sitting there talking about like the gross stories and being hit on and stuff and just laughing. It was fun. It was different.
And then you had a fire eater.
We had a fire eater. Technically, yeah, she eats fire. No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she eats fire. I watched the show.
She doesn't spit fire. No, she corrected me on something.
She eats it. She doesn't spit it. She doesn't blow the plume out of her mouth.
Yes, that's it.
She swallows the fire.
That's it.
See, I watched the show.
Good.
And you did a great
job. That was a test.
And you did a great job.
Thank you.
No, you really did. I mean, I thought both shows were excellent. That first show with Katie, it took her a little bit to get her feet wet, and then she was really good.
So. Yeah.
All right. In studio tonight, we do have another chick. Valerie Hildreth. Her friends call her Boom Cookie, and that's her moniker. That's her sticker. She is one of LA's most sought-after illustrators, I guess is the term. I'm not sure.
Perfect? Yes.
Oh, she's one of LA's most sought-after perfect, whatever that is.
I appreciate the hype. Thank you.
And she's worked for Disney. She's worked for Marvel. She basically draws cartoons and is getting paid for it. So welcome to OK
so
Boomer.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's so cool.
Now, it's funny. Growing up on Bugs Bunny, growing up on all of those shows, mm-hmm. and I would read the credits because I was a nerd, and they were almost all men. And
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's still definitely male-dominated, but especially in recent years, that's changing quite a bit. I mean, there's been quite a boom, and animation is expanding in every possible way you can think of. So there's animation for everybody, made by everybody. And studios are specifically reaching out now to people of all types because we understand that's the world we're in now.
No, I get it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't mean that women weren't going to be good at it, but it was just interesting how...
Oh, no, traditionally. I mean, right. It's just how things were back then.
So what was your interest in the type of art that you do?
Well, that's a loaded question. I mean, you know, I could start out with the fact that I've just always drawn, and that's just always been that natural thing that I went to. I could start out with Saturday morning cartoons, which I'm very sad don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
That was, you know, hugely influential on me, as well as just various other aspects. You know, I was definitely encouraged. I was not discouraged to watch cartoons, I'll say that much.
This has to be interesting for you because you are a amateur artist as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be
fair... Well, she's a professional.
To be fair, there was a point in my life where I decided if I wanted to be an illustrator or if I wanted to pursue acting and, like, mm-hmm. which one did I want to make more of a creative hobby. Mm-hmm. And for me, I've always had a very strange thing with art. I love it very much, but I also hate to be told what to draw. So I would get into these like manic art fits where I'm like, I can't do this mm-hmm. right now. And with acting, it was always easier. So I was like, I'm going to draw for myself and act as a thing. So
that right there is like the decision that you make.
Yeah. Yes. And I still do things and I kind of gotten to the things that I draw, I'm like, okay, I can creatively choose to focus on those and like not do it for other people. So it's like right. finally kind of moved into that. But
yeah, because you know, when you get into it professionally, you run the risk of overload because yeah. you still have to do it for yourself.
Yeah.
You still want to, and you still really have to in order to release it. But you've already spent all day doing it for somebody else. So, you know, then you get it to a point where you really have to figure out other things, which is difficult to do when you're truly addicted to it.
Now, I know a couple of illustrators, and it's interesting because and I'm going to ask you this question, but they both started out sort of how Victoria draws. And in all of your drawings I've ever seen, Victoria, they're either in pencil or pen.
Yeah, but I can animate them. I have like a tablet in my Procreate.
No, what I'm saying is I haven't seen like oil paintings or pastels, brushwork.
I just don't take pictures of them, yeah.
Right. But did you start...
That's a fairly privileged lifestyle.
Yeah.
With yeah. pencil and pen as well?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, my favorite tool when I was younger was a Bic pen. Yeah. Because you can really get great line weights and different... lightnesses with it, so it was very versatile, actually. And I would just draw, you know, during class, completely ignore. Actually, no, I didn't completely ignore everything. I'm very grateful for a teacher I had in middle school who said she was totally okay with us drawing in class because she knew that while you're drawing, you're actually imprinting whatever information is coming in. So that's what I did and still do, actually.
Where was middle school?
I grew up, so this is a fun little thing that I like to tell people about me to help mm-hmm. them understand about me. I grew up in a little town in Massachusetts called Lexington. And if anybody who's listening knows their history, or you guys know
Paul
your
history. Paul Revere.
Exactly. That's where the Revolutionary War started. And so I had this really unique experience growing up. Every year on Independence Day, if you were up early enough, in fact, from mm-hmm. my house that I grew up in, you could hear Paul Revere riding down the street. Yep, redcoats are coming, redcoats are coming. That was pretty early. That was like maybe around 4:30 in the morning he would do that. And then a couple hours later, around, I don't know, 6:30, we'd wake up. We'd walk to the center of town because I lived very close to the center of town to this place called the Battle Green. This is a historic site, and you have the Minuteman statue there. So if you ever go visit, that's the site that everybody goes to.
That's so cool.
Because it's where the battle started, and we would watch them kill each other.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
I like to tell people this is a very white holiday
yeah,
that
yeah.
we celebrate in Massachusetts.
You don't sound like you're from Beantown.
Yeah, no, I don't have the accent. If anything, the weird thing, my father's side of the family is from New York. And the funny thing is, if anything, I get a little bit of a New York accent, even though I never spent any time there growing up.
Like, I understand.
That's wicked cool.
Yeah. Wicked.
Yeah, I understand.
My aunts
that.
Have some very strong accents, so I probably got it just by listening to them.
So give me a little background on how one goes from hobbyist to probably formal study to actually getting hired and being a pro in this town, because it's not easy.
Mm. Yeah, it takes a lot of gumption, as they say. I personally, it's different for everybody. Let me make that clear. Everybody has their own journey, and that's part of the fun of it, you yeah. know? And I absolutely disagree with any artist that says this is the way to do it. No, it's any way to do it. And the thing is, you need to just focus on yourself and on your own art. And then you make that decision mm-hmm. that Victoria made.
Yeah.
it comes up at some point. You have to make that decision. And for me, I was 18. I was struggling academically and just had that really strong creativity. Couldn't stop. Was drawing 24/7. So I was a high school dropout. I dropped out my junior year. I got my GED that summer. I just wanted to move forward with life. And my first attempt, because I was afraid of being an artist, was to study paralegal. Because yeah. I grew up in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
that's what you do.
They don't do a lot of drawing in paralegal class.
Not at all, no. I was trying to be super safe, but also I'm actually very interested in the law. It's the law, for me, is a mm-hmm. hobby. So a little bit, you know. It's like, I
yeah.
get that.
I know what you
it.
Mean. I know what you mean. Yeah.
But yeah, after a year of attempting that at community college, and... you got to see where it takes you. And it was terrifying. Yeah. And, it, you know, every... But I have that personality, and that's what it takes. You have to have that personality where if you feel fear, you're going to stare it down.
Did you have your parents' support?
Yes.
Because dropping out of high school is a big deal.
Yeah.
And then studying for a real career makes them a little bit happier, and then you're dropping out for that. I mean, Victoria's very fortunate because everybody in her family is pretty much an artist. And her mom has been extremely supportive of their endeavors.
She was not.
Oh, what, she was?
No. I was a business major, Ralph, for a year. And then I quit and I got into UC Berkeley and I quit going to college and it broke my mom's heart. She still tells people, like, that's like a thing. She's like, Victoria got into UC Berkeley. I'm like, I didn't go, Mom. Stop telling people that.
No, because Keaton said your mom was extremely supportive of all of your endeavors.
To a degree.
Keaton is her brother.
Yeah, to a degree.
Thank you.
She wanted me to go. She wanted me to go to UC Berkeley. My dad was the one who told me to quit college. My dad was the one who told me to quit college and to be an actor. My dad was like, "Why are you studying business, you idiot?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I thought it would be
That's
smart."
Really interesting. You had both perspectives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was different. My mom just wanted me to go to college, probably because she didn't go to college. Like she went to the Fashion Institute and like dropped out.
Mm.
But I think it's, you know, you always want your kids to do better than you. So in her mind, it was that. But she's very proud and she's like of my artistic stuff and she supports everything I do.
Right.
But yeah.
Just out of curiosity, did you ever end up getting any degrees?
I have an AA degree in like liberal arts from community college, but that's like about it.
And by the way, I highly encourage everyone who's young to go to community college first.
Oh, it was great.
I found it to be a wonderful experience to figure out, like I said, because I had a hard time.
Yeah.
I have a different perspective. I think everybody, once they graduate or get their GED from high school, should take at least a gap year or two and go to work.
Sure.
That's a good idea.
I mean,
too.
I did it like the opposite. I literally did the opposite of that. I took no time off. I didn't no one explained anything to me. So like I didn't understand that I could go to college for things that I actually enjoyed doing. So that was like a really hard lesson to figure out. And like at the same time I was taking drawing classes and I was like, I don't know. I was very scared of being an artist. My mom actually, I went to go tour Otis. Because I was like, I'll go here and
that's
I'll be
the design school.
Yeah,
that's
excellent. I was like, I want to be an illustrator. So I got like, I was very serious on doing it. And then my mom was such a jerk about it. We went to like Venice Beach after, and she's like, yeah, if you go to Otis, this is where you're going to sell your drawings. And I was like, thanks, Mom. Thanks, Mom. So that stuff scares her more because it's not a finite thing. So like, and she had like a love hate thing with my drawings. She used to tell everyone that I wasn't abused because I draw monsters. And I'm like, thank you. But
yeah. I mean, you know, you're tapping in there because I don't think it's been terribly easy for my family to be supportive of me. They've certainly done their best. And I think that they've done a pretty good job, honestly.
Yeah.
What do you think of a woman that draws monsters?
Well, I don't really think of women that draw. As long as you're doing stuff that makes you happy and fulfills you, I think everyone should have some kind of art in their life. I think it's essential, 100% essential.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Ralph's trying to loaded little question there, Ralph.
I did. I tried to slip it in there. What the heck?
You know, I'm the type, I'll stop and talk to the people on Venice Beach, too. I mean, like I said, everyone has a story, and it's you know, not... not a judgmental thing. It's easy to be judgmental.
Right. Yeah, and you can, like, you know, there's a very simple thing. You can always go back and look at specific stuff that I found inspiration from in general. And, you know, I love, like, 90s cartoons. I grew up watching them. So
what are 90s cartoons?
The old Beetlejuice TV show.
Okay.
So, like, that cartoon TV show specifically. I watched Ren and Stimpy a lot. I watched... just like the variety of the Saturday morning cartoons, like the ones where it was like all the Halloween stuff, like I loved.
Like all the goth stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's super like 90s. I was into Tim Burton.
Yes, Tim Burton's my favorite. All Real Monsters. So it's like the things.
Classic Nickelodeon.
Yeah, old Nickelodeon, like the weird clay animation stuff that they did. So the things that I'm drawn to naturally are those things. So I tend to draw in that style. People see my drawings and they're like, oh, it's very Tim Burton. I'm like, he's my favorite dude. I love Guillermo del Toro, like as a director, artistic style stuff. Like they're all into the same things. So it's like it's very much like a genre that I've always kind of fallen into.
I don't think you ever grow out of, I mean, that's the thing, you don't grow out of copying the things that you like.
Yeah.
You just get more clever about it.
Yes.
So who inspired you then?
So many artists. It's hard to pinpoint a few because I also have that experience not just in animation. Mm-hmm. So I'm that jack of all trades as opposed to the master of one. That being said, yeah, I mean, all the classic cartoons, all the 90s stuff. 90s animation was really fun.
Yeah.
Really just fun, pure fun. And I try to bring that spirit into my work still.
The Simpsons came out of the 90s, right?
Yeah, The Simpsons, that's like another one.
South Park?
South Park's like a little later, like 2000s, I believe. Like maybe late 90s. Late
90s. There was like a boom around then, and it really encouraged the industry. But then I think like in a way they didn't really know what to do after that, so it kind of stagnated a little bit. Mm-hmm. But then in recent years, again, just because of the internet.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that I know, like artists and stuff, that have even like through bands and things have done really cool stuff.
And if you want to see it really exposed, just look at Trey Parker's contract, $900 million. Yeah. Parents are going to be pushing kids to be artists again.
Yeah, I'm so curious about what their setup is going to be now, because I think I was telling you about this before. The South Park setup, from what I heard from friends, was absolutely one of the most insane production schedules I've ever heard of. But it worked for their personality types.
Okay.
You know? So this is an interesting thing, too, that I like to point out, that, first of all, it's too bad when anyone is discouraged.
Yes.
Because there is a need for art, and all the time, for various reasons. And people just don't understand that, the necessity of it. But also it's great for business. If you use artists the right way, you know, it's marketing, it's promotional.
Okay, I have a couple of questions on that.
Yeah.
Now, are you just pay for play, which means you just work for the studios or somebody, and you only work when you get paid? Do you create your own stuff to sell on your own outside of pay for play? And what the hell is an NFT?
Oh, yeah.
You can take them anywhere you want.
Yes, and NFTs are 1% art. That's what that is. It's something I wish I knew how to do, because I wouldn't be struggling right now. But right now I'm developing my own ideas. But like I was saying before, you know.
So you are still primarily pay for play.
Yeah, I'm always open for the contract work.
Right.
And I'm always trying to help out my friends when they need
it. Now, do you create your own unique art pieces to sell to the public?
Yes.
And where would anybody find them?
Oh, my own stuff. I don't actually have a store right now, but you can definitely find me on Instagram, and that's mostly where I do all my updates. I also have a Facebook group where I just try to gather people of like minds.
And your your Instagram is Boom Cookie.
That's very correct. Cool. You should be able to Google Boom Cookie, and I'm all over the place.
Without the S, because if you go to Boom, this is a very funny story.
Boom Cookies?
Yes.
No.
Do you want to know how Valerie and I met?
Yeah, I do.
So I am calling an Uber about a year and a half ago.
Uh-huh.
And so on the ride from my house to Grand Havana Room, my Uber driver says, would you like to try a cookie? I said, I love cookies. Sure. Mm-hmm. And she gave me a cookie. I'm like, this is great. She goes, I make them. The name of my company is Boom Cookies with an S.
Are you kidding me?
She's like, yes. She says, you have to look me up and you can order my cookies and send it to your friends. I said, absolutely. I'll support you. So I get up to Grand Havana Room. I had a couple of cocktails. Remembered I had to do this. And I went on to Instagram and friended Boom Cookie. No S.
Mm-hmm.
And it's her site. Don't know her. But a year later, she starts liking all my photos. I'm like, oh, my God, that's the cookie girl. And so I go to follow her. I'm like, there were no cookies on her site. And I went to the wrong site, and that's how I met Valerie.
That's so funny.
I think what I recall is that you responded to some of my stories, I think.
Right.
Which is great.
Because you have a cookie logo or emblem.
Yeah, yeah, and that's Instagram has been great for meeting some fabulous people that
that's
way.
That's awesome.
So I'm really glad that that happened.
But you don't make cookies, do you?
I do. Well, I can. I have.
So wait, but before you back, so I don't confuse the people that are actually listening. Boom Cookie. No S.
Yes, correct. One singular cookie.
That's right. I am the Boom Cookie. And I love it. I used to be the only one.
Right.
I remember many years ago, so I came up with this moniker because I realized I had to come up with my Marilyn Monroe.
Sure.
In order to make it here in L.A. There's a story behind the name, which I won't get into right now. But I do remember the first time there was competition on Google. I Googled My Boom Cookie, you know, every once in a while to see what comes up. And Ben and Jerry's had come up with an ice cream flavor that completely bumped me off Google. I think it was Cookie Boom. So the words were just switched. And I was so hurt. Yeah. I was like, oh, my God. Ben and Jerry's just destroyed me.
Have you trademarked your name, though?
It is trademarked.
Okay, so I'd go after Ben and Jerry, then, for trademark infringement.
I see it as free publicity.
All right.
For now. You know, if anyone really crosses the line, if somebody uses the name Boom Cookie or uses those words in combination improperly, I will come after
them. I'm a member of a club where there's about 400 attorneys if you ever need advice.
Of course, always.
Ben and Jerry's, they're cool. They're cool, man. Yeah. They do good work. I support them.
So since then, there's been a few, I guess, cookie folks who, there are a few Boom Cookies now, but I am the singular.
Excellent. So you do gallery openings and...
I haven't that's done a gallery for a while, but that's really fun scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're pay for play, like at Marvel or DC, I'm assuming... You're probably creating a unique character, and that's why they're hiring you, and they get passes on what the character looks like.
Correct. So somebody like Marvel or DC, they usually have their own characters. Okay. If you get to design a character for them, that's like you are a super rock star.
Now, who owns that character?
They do, of course. They own everything. In fact, depending on what kind of production you work on, you don't even get credit now sometimes.
Yeah, that's what I
really?
That's what I've heard. Yes.
Yeah, unfortunately, and this is something that I am really unhappy about and very outspoken about as well. So I hope you don't mind me bringing it up on your program.
Yeah.
But when the streaming services started up, our contract change with the union during the negotiations, and they snuck in this clause into our contract using the streaming services as an excuse to essentially just negate most of the rules around pay and credit.
Credit is so important because you want to get hired again. Right.
Yeah, I know I've heard about this too. It's kind of like the idea of like a studio musician.
Right.
It's like they're getting paid and that's it, and they get no credit for it. I'm just like, that's nuts.
So it's like, great, I got my pizza for a month. And
Yeah.
I mean, for example, under this clause, I have a YouTube short that has over 16 million views that I don't have credit for.
That's insane.
Yeah. So it hurts, and it's really not cool. But, you know, there's a lot of things, not just in my industry, you know. Also, whenever I talk about these things, it always makes me think. I like to say that Hollywood imitates America the way art imitates life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's happening here, what's happening to artists and what happens to us is what's happening to everybody else. It's just on a, you know, a much grander scale, or it's happens to us first.
Yeah.
And then it kind of like rolls. There's like a domino effect and it happens to everybody else. I remember when the recession hit in 2008. And that was the first recession that laid off a lot of people. I just at that time thought to myself, oh, now everybody's living the artist life right now. That's what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of been like that ever since, though. And I think everyone's starting to understand how much that lifestyle really stinks.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I mean, that's why it's so important just to keep conversating and being open and
The streaming stuff has messed up a lot of things for people and for actors and just people in general. So it's crazy that, you know,
the big tidal wave is coming, and you're starting to see it with Peacock TV, CBS All Access. Once they all have their own streaming service, they're not going to syndicate anything because they'll own it forever. They're not going to send it to TNT or TBS. Because you just go to Peacock, you just go to CBS All Access, you get it anytime you want, which means no syndication for actors or writers.
So basically what I'm seeing with some of these streaming services, especially, you know, the ones that are really the alphas, I guess you could say right now, is exactly that. What I'm seeing is that they're pushing to create as much content as they can, as much of a variety of content as they can, so that they can then claim it for future use.
Right.
And you don't need to produce, you know, endless seasons that way. You just do however many you need to claim the idea, and then you can come back to it when you want and do whatever you want with it. So, you know, I'm curious to see how that works out exactly. You know, who can say? Who saw it getting to this point? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a romance part of me that never thought. Hollywood was always a business. And my mentors growing up in the business always said, Ralph, the word is show business.
Yeah, that's what my mom says.
Right? However, I never thought that Hollywood would get to the point where they would dilute those that make the art to the way that they're diluting those that make the art. I always thought they would, you know, bean count on different aspects of production, but never on the actual artists themselves. And they're coming down hard. You could ask our mutual friend Craig Titley, you know, what quotes are now. They're half of what they were 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so it's a little bit tricky because there are more jobs. There is, like, quote unquote, more opportunity. But yeah, it's
less pay.
It's not any better necessarily than it was before.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are the characters that you like to draw?
You know what? I'll say I love drawing everything. I mean, the thing is, I'm such an addict. I mean, you throw something at me, I'll draw it. That being said, I am kind of known for drawing robots. I have
That's awesome.
A fair amount of experience with robots. Thanks. It's fun. That's robots
cool.
are fun.
Yeah, I've drawn robots are great.
Yeah.
And they're hip now with Elon Musk coming out with Robot Man.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh my gosh, what is this?
He's come out with a dancing robot, and his plan is to create as many of these robots as possible to do the menial work that no one wants to work, like a cashier, someone that sweeps a parking lot.
I'm pretty sure there are still people who have those jobs.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, make some more friends. That's what you need to do.
I'm sorry, but he needs to get some ideas outside of Hollywood.
Yeah.
I don't need an iRobot life. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we just need to send him all of the Terminators so he can just remember the outcome of this. Because I'm pretty sure it's not good.
I heard it's unavoidable.
Yeah.
I heard it's unavoidable. The AI ruled future. I don't know.
Does he date a Hollywood starlet or something?
Yeah, Grimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's nuts.
Is she?
Yeah, she's crazy. She's crazy. She's cool. She's
right.
weird. And like that's why I love her. But she's like, I wouldn't say I love her. I appreciate her as an artist because she is different and eccentric. And I've seen her perform live at festivals and stuff. And she's very weird, which I appreciate. But...
yes, yeah, weirdos unite.
Yeah, but then they had their kid and they named their kid like...
It was a symbol.
Yeah.
It was sort of like Prince.
Yeah, and that's just, you're just...
I mean, aren't all the celebrities kind of doing that?
But it was like a long-coded one, like a coding, like where there's like apostrophe, like it was insane. It was like a long code. I'm like, you just, like you can't even pronounce it. I'm like, that just sucks for the, like you're not thinking of this as a person that you created. It's an extension of your brand. Like, and that's what, I'm like, you suck.
Yeah,
that stuff I don't like.
They branded their kid.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like a weird little, like, you know, accessory. It's not a human being that's going to grow up with thoughts and opinions about how much their name sucks. But.
Live and learn.
You know, that's
me.
Live
and learn.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, parenthood, I should say.
It's yeah.
Real learning but
he was married
for a lot of people.
He was married before. He was married before. She's super young.
Grimes?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was his wife before? Was she in the industry?
I think she helped start his business or something with him. And like helped, that's usually how it goes. She was like, you know, age appropriate, beautiful, helped start his business with him. And then like he started becoming, I mean, she was speaking out a lot saying he was abusive, but like that kind of thing.
Well, he's very high on the spectrum.
Yeah. And then he started dating like younger, like cheating on her with younger people. And then like they had a really bad divorce. But
wow.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know.
What?
I'm just like, there's part of me that's like, you know, cool, you know, advanced technology and stuff, like as we should as a society. But then there's like crazy stuff. I'm like, find a cure for like AIDS or something. Like, don't create a brain chip so we can just.
He has a self-driving car.
Well, yeah, I mean, those are insane, too. My freaking cousin has, like, one of the, like, the Tesla that just, it's insane. But, like, do you know about this brain chip?
No.
So, basically, it goes,
it goes
into your brain. It's a brain chip. This is what, literally, conspiracy theorists are terrified of.
Yeah.
And he actually made it. I'm like, you moron. Like, you're proving a point. But it just, you can communicate without talking. So, like, I could tell you how I feel about some, which I don't know how you decide to turn off. Like, it just reminds me of that Mel Gibson movie, like, What a Woman Wants or whatever.
Exactly.
Like, I like it just, there's, how are you going to filter that out?
So but, maybe Musk just sits at home at night watching old 60s, 70s, yeah. 80s movies.
And the says, Terminator, right. Mel Gibson, yeah, What a Woman Wants. That's it. He's just creating that world for us. That'd be a lot nicer, I think.
That'd be pretty funny.
Yeah.
Well, tell me if I'm wrong. The three biggest things that helped illustrators over probably the last 25 years, anime, Marvel, and DC.
I feel like Marvel and DC should be one.
Okay.
Yeah.
The two.
I mean, those are probably the most commercial forms of art.
And that's how people get hired. When
true. Can, I mean, if you're looking for a staff job, yes. But, you know, that's kind of a little bit of a fantasy. So it's safer as an artist to consider yourself more of an entrepreneur. Because no matter what you get onto, no matter, it's always a project. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be an end date. Always. And they're usually pretty short term. So you have to be able to go from project to project. And people don't understand. This is one of the reasons why independent artists, I think, are so successful now. Because the internet has enabled them to just do their own thing.
Yeah.
Well, they don't have to acquiesce
to
the employer. Well, how much but talent's got to be there. Because prior to the internet, prior to cell phones, a guy that commercialized art and made a freaking fortune was Warhol.
Yeah, that was a long time. Well, he was in the fine art world, though. That's the fine art world. He had nothing to do
Campbell's
with comics.
Campbell's Soup is not fine art.
So Andy Warhol.
Well, he that's
what
he is. Yeah. Sorry, Ralph.
Art is always subjective. Always subjective. Always. But Andy Warhol, you know, if you want to talk about him, he was working at the same time as Stan Lee.
Right.
So the example you're using, Marvel, DC, you would refer to Stan Lee. But it's a good thing that you're bringing that up because that's important to remember. There are all these different options.
Absolutely.
Art. There's a place for everybody. And the trick is to tap into that and go for it. And I would say, yeah, actually the most influential thing obviously has been the internet and these social media platforms enabling independent artists.
I was reading today that there's Twitter was a fire. I love when Twitter goes a fire because I'm not even on Twitter, but I love when Twitter goes a fire. Jay-Z and Beyonce used a basket big piece behind them for the launch of their new product.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, Basquiat, who was the most anti-capitalist artist of his generation, is now being used in a commercial operation by Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Yeah, it's interesting times that we live in. I think about that a lot when it comes to things like music.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like, older music that is, I felt or thought was like anti-capitalist, but is totally being used in commercials and stuff.
Yeah, they use David Bowie so often. I'm like, leave him alone. Leave him alone.
Wait, you've heard his music in commercials?
I've heard Heroes in a car commercial.
Oh, no.
Heroes. I mean, if the money goes to Iman, I love her, so fine. But,
Here's the thing. The money is the money.
Yeah.
You know? So, and don't mistake that the artist is necessarily supporting the employer.
Yeah.
Right.
And, like, politically, they're just getting paid.
Yeah.
And I know artists specifically who like to get jobs with corporations or employers that they don't like because they get to take their money from them.
Yeah.
So that's one way to look at it, you know?
Sorry, but, yeah. My phone should be.
Welcome to College Radio 101.
Yeah. Hey, listen. I get trash people messaging you. Okay, what can I say? Someone's telling me I have a mortgage. I'm like, dude, I'm 31, buying a house these days, unheard of.
Oh,
I'm like,
God.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh,
I'm like,
I've
I wish
totally
I did.
Given up on that dream.
Yeah.
Is it possible to sample artwork like they sample music?
Yeah, art. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Everybody does it all the time.
Okay. People also steal a lot of things.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, they sample, but sampling and music, like, I feel like you would have to pay, you like, if it becomes a hit, like, you have to pay royalties into something because there's writers and stuff like that. But so many people rip off, like, The Simpsons is a good example.
Right, because the difference is, I think, mostly education.
Yeah.
People aren't as educated. Everybody knows the music.
Yeah.
We've grown up with it and such. But for some reason, people just aren't as educated about the visual arts.
Yeah.
So people literally will trace other artists' work.
Yeah.
And you're not necessarily going to know it unless you're educated enough to know where that source, you know, who the source is, or to be able to spot those telltale signs that, oh, this is actually an amateur artist just tracing or whatnot. So that's another reason why I'm such a proponent for education.
Do you just draw or do you animate? them?
All the above. All
that's
the
cool.
Above. Yeah. Cool. When it comes to animation,
what is
do...
the difference for the lay people like me?
So in other words, like you can have an illustration, which is just a single piece of artwork, which could depict a character, could depict a scene. Illustration specifically does have a story element to it, so that's important to note. Or could it be instructional? Animation versus is a series of drawings, which makes movement and brings it to life, usually on screen somehow. When it comes to animation, I like just messing around. I love just doing that's something I do kind of more of as a hobby. Although now that I am getting into the development side and trying to make moves as a creator of my own pitches and things, I mean, I've been pitching for years, but in the past it was mostly just practice.
Yeah.
You know, I did not even think I was going to sell anything, but if they let me in the door to talk to them, I would do it just so I could see what I would have to do later on. I lost my train of thought. Now that I'm doing it, that's right. Now that I'm developing, I might do things like animatics, which is like an in-between. So you go from, normally you go from story, which is the written word, taking that to storyboard, which lays out the key frames, the key moments in that script. And then you just kind of fill it in more and more and more as you go along the process. And animatic is like the next step. You fill in more of the frames, so you get a little bit of that movement, you get more of the feel. So in order to really convey the story that I want and the characters that I want, that's what I try to go for professionally right now. I'm working currently on all the steps of the process, but the end pitch will have an animatic that people can watch and just hopefully put a smile on people's face, because that's really all cool that I'm going for all the time.
What about like children's books?
Yeah, done that. Yeah.
That's great. A huge industry.
Absolutely. And, you know, and it goes back and forth. You know, sometimes you start with the animation and then you have the products that get sold from that. Books can be one of that. But a lot of times, children's books will make movies out of it, or TV shows. Like if a producer or some VP somewhere,
Charlie Brown or The Grinch, or
exactly. Curious George.
Curious George
has a lot of animated.
Right. Alice in Wonderland.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's basically just doing whatever, however you do it, because if it's a good idea, if it's a good story, it'll come through no matter what the format is. No matter what the format is, people always appreciate good work.
I have a friend of mine that used to, I forget what show she worked on, Fox, but she made me a great photo of the Mad Hatter as a rabbit trying to grab Alice, and it's called Malice in Wonderland.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. You know what? That reminds me of one of my favorites is Gary Wolfe. I'm going to name him because Roger Rabbit. He's the creator of Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
And he's also from Massachusetts, or he currently lives in Massachusetts, so we have some similar things in common. And I just love that. I'm friends with him on Facebook. You can look him up on Facebook. He posts Roger Rabbit stuff all the time. And it's just so fun to see, because he shares everything, all the fan art he gets, which plays around with it. And, you know, right there, that right there is, like, what everybody should focus on. I don't know.
That's I have like a lot of I really like a lot of surrealist artists that, you know, some of them started out in tattooing, which is kind of interesting, but they write like dark children's stories. Like one, his name is like Gris Grimley. I don't know if you've heard of it. He's like one of my very favorite. I've gone to a lot of his exhibits. Another is like Greg Criola Simpkins. He's weird.
Huge,
Mark Ryden's like the big one, but like
one of the great movies of all time on children's books, which is to me, it's just a classic, is Elf.
Elf?
Elf, that was based on a children's book?
No, the movie's about children's books.
Oh.
The one with Will Ferrell.
Yes. His dad, Jimmy Kahn, is the publisher of children's books, and they can't come up with a children's book for Christmas.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, right.
It's hard to remember the storyline when Will Ferrell's just a giant elf. You know, so.
And it becomes a children's book at the end that becomes very successful called Elf.
Oh, that's right. Okay, it's all coming back to me.
Oh, my God, it's such a great movie.
Yeah, it's
all coming back to me now.
It's great.
Live your life. You know, that's, again, most important thing. Live your life. Don't get sucked into it so much, because that's where the ideas come from.
And by the way, and the only reason I brought up children's books is because if children latch onto something, Hollywood goes all over it.
They do, of course.
Whether it's the Harry Potter series or, you know, like you said, Curious George, any of these movies that come out, because they know they have a built-in audience. Yeah. And not only that, I'll go see a movie once and then I'll wait for it to stream. A kid will see the movie 15 times in a row.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
I think I made my parents rent The Little Mermaid for like a month straight.
I think my niece watched Frozen for 200 hours consecutively.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Now, I grew up in the decadent 70s because I'm an old man, and we had a porn called Fritz the Cat.
Jesus Christ. Just how you say it, man.
I mean, it essentially is. Yeah. It was you hadn't watched it, though.
That's what I'm about to say, because I was only a kid. It was a triple X cartoon called Fritz the Cat, only played in Times Square. You had to be an adult, at least 21, to get in to see it.
But that's an interesting fact.
Yeah, and it was always in the newspaper. Fritz the Cat, 26th week in a row, 32nd week in a row. And I've never watched it. And I'd love to know, where is the fantasy in cartoon sex?
Jesus.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a big thing you're tapping into.
Yeah,
right?
There's a lot of creepy and dark web things, for sure.
Really?
Yeah, anime is a huge one. I know, because my little brother. I was never into anime. Like, I always liked just weird, dark, like Tim Burton-y stuff. If you see, say 70s, I liked The Hobbit, like as a cartoon, like that cartoon.
Right.
Yes, like that stuff.
Any of the Warner Looney Tunes, like, you know?
Yeah, I loved Looney Tunes, but like the dark, weird. What was the big red monster with the long hair? With a brush, you had to brush him, and then the witch Hazel.
Oh, yeah, his hair went all the way down to his feet.
Yeah, and then Hazel the witch.
Yep.
Like stuff like that.
But, yeah, and like the difference is like I think we were discussing this a little bit early before we went on air. The difference between those guys is that, like, they were aware of what they were doing.
Yeah.
Versus you have these artists who maybe are repressed.
Right.
And it comes out
there
in different ways.
Yeah.
Which is horribly common. I hate to say the self-awareness aspect of society is definitely drifting away.
Yeah.
So that's actually something I like to focus on. But, you know, so it's okay if you acknowledge it, you know, like Looney Tunes. I grew up on that stuff too, but it was acknowledged.
The double entendres were
crazy. Like, it was like they were puns, you know,
right.
It was like they were adult puns. And that's one of the fun things about cartoons, when you do it on purpose. So it's something fun for the adults to catch.
Yeah, the kids don't know.
Aren't gonna, they're not gonna pick up on it. You do have to be kind of careful, because what kids will do is they will repeat actions that they see. So if it's like funny language or something crazy they can't repeat, then they won't. But if it's something kind of realistic and they think they can repeat it, they might.
Yeah, like Bart Simpson mooning people. Exactly. That's what my little brother did forever until it was very inappropriate.
My shorts, man.
Yeah, 100%. That was Casey our whole life.
I still do that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Literally.
I never grew out of that.
That is crazy.
Yeah, so, you know, it's really important, though, because there is a dark side, not just to animation, but to all entertainment.
So would you consider your art on the adult risque side, or more on the G-rated Disney side?
I am always skirting the line. Yeah, I am. I do like to draw adult things, but then I will, you know, limit my audience for that or be really careful. I haven't really projected that stuff very much, but I have plans for a lot of things, so I don't know. Stay tuned. Right now, though, I'm mostly concentrating on fun content. That's
cool.
The most important thing.
Do you know what fun content really is?
What?
Fun content is buffalo wings,
I was waiting for
chili
this.
Cheese fries, and nachos at the Pineapple Hill Saloon.
Yeah.
Oh,
and you can go in there for a cold beer, an ice cocktail, or even just a soft drink if you're sober, because we don't discriminate there. Everybody's happy there.
True.
It's a community bar. It's located on Moore Park in Van Nuys. You'll see an In-N-Out Burger. You don't go there. You go to the back of the parking lot, and that's where you'll see the Pineapple Hill Saloon, owned by Angela Marsden. That is fun content.
Thank you, Angela.
Yes.
Delicious content, indeed.
Yes.
She can be a cookie mon.
Yeah. That was the other question. Where'd you come up with Boom Cookie, or why?
How much time do we have?
We have about 15, 20 minutes.
Oh, good.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I I love it. So
or five.
We have five minutes. We have 5 minutes.
That should be enough. I mean, right. Basically, I came up with the name because I realized people were literally not remembering my real name. I remember in my first TV job, cartoon TV job, people literally were like, "What's your name again?" to my face. And I was the character designer on that show.
Great.
So I had come up with Cookie many years ago in college. That was my bowling name. We went bowling.
That's fun.
And I don't know why, but I thought Cookie is like that kind of person. You know, I wanted to like play that role of that lady. Like, Cookie, I'm rolling the ball. I'm going to be Cookie. I'm bringing my terriers to the bowling alley with me. There you go. That's my Long Island accent. Right. And then the boom came later after my first job was as a concept artist. I was mostly working on Nintendo DS games at a little independent studio in Santa Monica. And we had this great ritual of playing Call of Duty after work every single day for many hours. And my favorite weapon was a shotgun. I would just run up on you and boom, right in the face. So that's where I got that.
That's cool.
So I just combined the two because it just, I don't know, my brain put them together because that's how my brain works. That's why I do what
I do. Your brain's out there. when I found out that our music, our radio legend couldn't do the show tonight and then I needed someone to fill in and Valerie said she would be on standby, I contacted her yesterday to make sure she can do the show. She goes, dude, can't talk, playing Dungeons and Dragons. And
yes.
She hung up on me.
So good. So good.
Yeah, and then I think later I tried to call you, but I was doing a photo shoot. Right. Yeah, it was crazy life.
I've never had anybody say, dude, can't talk, playing Dungeons and Dragons.
That's my kind of person, man. Absolutely.
Priorities.
Absolutely.
You play that game as well?
I have. I've wanted to get into it more. I have friends that like do it like professionally, like streaming-wise.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It's very, very, it's huge now.
It's really cool.
Yeah, the streaming is huge.
Yeah.
It's a great game.
I won't say who, but at the club there are specific members that they used to have a party once a month in the media room, like the private room, and they would play Dungeons and Dragons.
If you have a good crowd to play with, yeah,
they're the coolest. I like request to work for them.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah,
it's a good time. It's a really easy time.
So, yeah. Would you consider yourself a nerd?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Although probably the more common term for me would be weirdo. That's what I grew up with.
Nerd is endearing. Weirdo is strange.
Yeah.
Weirdo and strange can be cool. Yeah,
I'm all of the above.
It could be cool.
Were you a loner growing up?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I definitely had my friends. I had some really good friends actually growing up, people I'm still connected to.
One of my really tight friends from Cub Scouts, Chris Cocozo, who became a very famous illustrator in New York, he had literally moments where he wouldn't go out for 2 or 3 days because he got just stuck in his head to draw.
I didn't go out very much. Okay. My brother was very much more active than I was. I mean, he was always out with his friends every single day. I would go out with my friends maybe like once a week. Yeah, so I did spend a lot of time in my room, kind of alone, imagining, playing. I didn't realize it until, you know, much later in life when you go through your therapy at some point.
Yeah.
And you start processing things and you're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have been alone quite that much.
Yeah, for sure.
But I guess it got me here. So there you go.
I'm the same, man. I'm the same. Yeah, yeah, I understand it for sure.
Yeah.
I guess. You know, it's I don't have an artistic bone in my body. So you folks just absolutely amaze me. I mean, I have trouble drawing a stick figure playing Hangman, you know? And when I see some of the little doodles that she does on a napkin while she's, like, killing time between serving drinks, I'm like...
I know. I used to get in trouble a lot for that.
But it's amazing.
Because I have to draw.
But your work is amazing.
Yeah.
And you're doing it with distractions all abound, hustling cocktails, and then going back to your drawing. It's like, it is something that is truly on loan from God because
we all have strengths and weaknesses.
No, I get it. No,
we
I get
all
it.
Have our talents.
But there's something about taking a pen and paper or a brush and putting it onto a canvas or a piece of paper and making it come to life where it's recognizable, it's got depth, it's got character, it's got emotion, you know, it evokes a feeling from people. That is, to me, really special, you know?
Thank you.
Music is a little bit different because there's melody and there's rhythm and there's sound. Mm-hmm. Art is silent.
Yeah.
It's just your eyes, your brain, your spirit, your heart, and that's why I think that's one of the most powerful mediums, because there is no sound to it. It's just your eyes. And so,
well, you should bring me back on, because now you're starting to get into like the spirituality of art, which is a whole other conversation.
We will do that. And Valerie can be found at Boom Cookie on Instagram. She's got a Facebook group called Boom Cookie. Are these are open sites, or do you have
the
to
group,
be invited?
They're open. They're all public. Okay. Yeah, come on by, follow. The group is actually called Cookie Mon, because you all are my Cookie Mon.
M-A-N?
O-N. So O-N? It's a play on the 90s cartoons. Of
That's
course.
Awesome.
We grew up with Pokemon, Digimon.
Well, thank you, Valerie. Mm-hmm. Victoria, it's happy to be back with you. And to all of you guys out there, thank you for tuning in to OK Boomer.
You're listening to OK Boomer with Ralph Odierna and Victoria Greenwood, only on LA Talk Radio.